This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 148 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, May 16, 2014. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Sarah Gooding. And we're going to get you caught up on some of the news today. And we also have David Bissett, who's one of the organizers of WordCamp Miami. We brought him on to sort of converse with us and discuss, sort of recap WordCamp Miami and BuddyCamp Miami, which Sarah and I both attended last weekend. So let's get you caught up on the news first. It turns out that more than 97% of updates to WordPress 3.9.1 were automatic. Last week, 3.9.1 was released. In fact, WP Tavern was upgraded automatically while I was 30,000 feet in the air. And when I landed, I was happy to see that WordPress Tavern still worked. So that was pretty neat. But the release fixed 34 bugs, including several fixes for multi-site, Tiny MCE, the customizer widgets, audio-video playlist, and things like that. Andrew Nason, who's one of the lead developers of WordPress, reported that in the 7 minutes between starting 3.9.1 updates and writing the release post, WordPress had performed approximately 68,000 background updates. And after the release had been out for 100 minutes, 3.9.1 crossed a million downloads with 10,000 updates happening per minute. So that's like, that's a ton of updates and a ton of downloads going out, and it's pretty neat to see that 97% of those are automatic. And I guess at some point in the near future, this type of news won't be news. It'll just be the, you know, WordPress working as it should. At least that's the goal. So we have this is a big story that happened last week. If you've did any commerce or did business with Woo Themes within the past, past year or so, you're going to want to take a look at your credit card statements and see if any fraudulent activity has happened. Woo Themes released a blog post back about May 9th, May 10th that notified customers that they were following up on reports of fraudulent activity to customers' credit cards. And according to a follow-up blog post, they said that customers who purchased after November 27, 2013 up until May 8, 2014 are suspected to be affected by the breach. They've contacted all of those customers within that time frame. They believe that the sophisticated criminal hackers had intercepted some credit card details between the checkout processor and the off-site credit card processor, so between the checkout and the off-site credit card processor. Sounds to me like some sort of man-in-the-middle attack, but nothing has been confirmed yet. So they've done all sorts of things, including an audit to their servers, moving their payment off-site using PayPal Express, using Duo Security for administrators. They've done all sorts of things. They're still continuing to investigate the matter. But,
so they don't know why it happened yet, Jeff?
No, not officially. But
so also, maybe there's like a vulnerability in WooCommerce, do you think?
Right now they said that there is no vulnerability in WooCommerce. They've had it audited by security as well. Their servers on WP Engine have been audited. So far, nothing points to a vulnerability in WooCommerce. That's been asked numerous times, so that's good news. And if they're they mentioned that they will continue to do security audits of WooCommerce and continue to do so for every major release. And if they happen to find that there is a vulnerability, they'll take immediate action. But I just want to say that it's kudos to WooThemes on, A, working with their customers to find out what's going on, and B, sort of being transparent about what happened, what it is they're doing, and trying to regain confidence in customers doing business with them, because there's a lot of people upset, and rightfully so, having their credit cards and debit cards canceled by their credit card company. I've read a lot of stories of people that were traveling, and those credit cards were the only form of payments they had, and they had to cancel them, and they were stuck in the middle of nowhere with no money. So I understand from their point of view how it could be very upsetting on how this would happen and being an inconvenience, but Wu Themes also was attacked, and now this is just a bad blotch on their image. But it's how they respond to these type of incidences that really shows their character and to try and regain trust and to doing business with them. So kudos to them for doing that. And just keep a lookout if you've done any sort of commerce with Wu Themes between November 27, 2013 and May 8th. Just keep an eye on your credit card statements. Let's see here. Next, the ability to anonymously comment or complain about WordPress may soon disappear. They call it, I'm not sure if the K is silent, but they call it, I would imagine, so vetching or kvetch, which is a Yiddish word, and it's defined as a nagging complaint. And we have, I've kvetched before numerous times. In fact, I do every week, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay, so you're agreeing.
So now I have a new word I can share with my wife.
Well, yeah, it does sound similar to a word that rhymes, but it has a different meaning, but we won't go into that.
All right,
So the kvetch forum was introduced in WordPress.org in 2007. What it did is it provided users an opportunity to anonymously tell developers what it was about WordPress that ticked them off. And every time the page is refreshed, you would see a new entry. Well, as it turns out, according to Scott Riley, who did some analysis, only 147 entries were approved to be displayed on the site, and the entries were only from January 9, 2007 to January 11, 2007. So all these years, there's only been 147 entries that have been rotating through on the site.
That's a tragedy.
Yeah, I couldn't believe these stats. And then the queue contains 31,000 entries that have not been approved, and 4,000 of which were from the last 6 months. So after sharing that data, Samuel Sidler had recommended in the ticket that brought about this this data, recommended that the ability to kvetch just be retired. And I'm a bit sad about that, because I think in a way it's a good idea, and I think there's some valuable data that could be gleaned from this, because A, it's anonymous, and B, there's always something in WordPress that ticks people off. And as long as you confine the scope to just WordPress and not talk about themes or plugins, I think it would just be one of those extra data points that you could view to see just, you know, what about WordPress is making people mad. And I'm not sure, have you ever kvetched or vetched about WordPress, or did you ever submit anything there?
I'm not sure. I may have years ago, but I probably just assumed that I was deleted or whatever, because it obviously didn't show up there. But I hope that they don't lose all of those. Like, I hope they're not just deleted, because I think there's some value in those.
Well, I got to imagine that's probably what's going to happen. I want to stress that it was recommended that the ability to vetch be retired. Nothing has been confirmed. But yeah, now I understand why every time I went there, even 7 years later, why I would see entries that seemed like it was from, you know, the land before time,
mm-hmm.
complaining about auto updates or this and that, and I'm like, that's been added to WordPress already. Well, now it makes sense. They were sending in the complaints, you know, 7 years ago. So hopefully that doesn't get retired. And I've seen some great comments to the article saying maybe they should create a kvetching site outside of WordPress. And see how that goes. Maybe even have it so that you could vote up or down the kvetches that are submitted, so people can sort of plus one things and say, yeah, you know, that really makes me mad.
Yeah, I hope somebody does that if they remove it from WordPress.
So we'll see what happens. Issue Press by Chris Wallace and UpThemes is now in beta, and you wrote about this today. And what is Issue Press going to provide?
Issue Press is really cool. I'm surprised that more people aren't going nuts over it. It's a new product from the team at UpThemes. It allows developers to provide public support for private GitHub repositories. So they don't have to share their code out there, but they can still let people submit issues to the issues queue. And it enables the people who are your customers on the front end to just post an issue in a way that's comfortable to them in WordPress, And then developers are going to have that sync back to their GitHub issues queue, and they can keep working in there without having to leave it to go, you know, to go use multiple different apps for providing support. So this is a really cool brand new tool that's going to be available probably around August if they can deliver on their time frame.
And I think one of the coolest things about IssuePress is, like you said, customers can use an interface they're familiar with, the front end of WordPress, via a page, and the developer can use an interface they're familiar with, GitHub. You don't have to intertwine the two, and I'm just that just sounds like really cool to me.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So
look forward to that. Can people sign up to the beta? Is that public beta? Can people sign up to it?
Yeah, you can sign up, and then you'll be able to download it and try it out right now. I think it's going to be free during the beta, and then afterwards they're going to put a price tag on it once they officially launch. But right now, if you want to check out the application, you can just sign up to be a beta tester, and then you'll be able to download it and install it. I did that earlier this morning, and I was really impressed by how it works.
Awesome. You can sign up at issuepress.co if you're interested in signing up to the beta. And speaking of BuddyCamp and WordCamp Miami, AppPressor debuted the AppBuddy mobile app at BuddyCamp Miami. And we were there on the scene, and you had a chance to interview Brian Messelheimer on the what the app does and sort of explain to us what it does.
Basically, it provides like a native app experience for iOS or Android devices, where you can have your BuddyPress site on your device functioning in the exact same way, except appified, so it's a lot easier to use with your thumbs and fingers. So anyone who wants to get a native app for their BuddyPress site will be able to use the new product from AppPressor. And I think right now it's still being tested, but it should be, I think it's in a couple of weeks, they should have it ready to go for everybody.
And I wanted to bring on at this point David Bissett, who is of Dimension Media. He's one of the primary organizers for WordCamp Miami. And David, did you know about this app being in development for WP Armchair? Did they consult with you, or did this just happen out of the blue?
No, I was made aware of it. I wasn't able to participate as much due to organizing WordCamp, of course.
Right.
Brian's actually the person kind of responsible for that. But we did talk, we did have numerous conversations about what the app could be, and he kind of took it from there. I think him and anybody involved with AppPressor deserves full credit for that. I loved what I saw. I see now the beginnings of a really great application platform for future WordCamps and conferences. So I'm really excited that we managed to get it started here. And it's kind of like how WP Armchair started on the last WordCamp Miami, where that there was an idea, and then Armchair came out of that. So I'm really excited that something like this is going to happen again, especially for something on mobile, in the mobile, universe.
Yeah, I'm wondering if. I know with WP Armchair, I was able to access it via the iPhone hookup to the WordPress site, but I needed an account. So I'm wondering if users will still need to have an account or through the AppBuddy, to share photos or pictures of the event, or if everything or no, because everything will be shared in the public domain using the hashtag.
Yeah, I was maybe it's confusing now because there's probably I was referring to the. Like the actual website, if you go to wcmia.wparmchair.com, that's what I was talking about, like what came out of last year's WordCamp Miami was that stuff. And that was still, the website itself was still sucking in the media. So we had like 36,000 tweets, for example, that we sucked in for archive purposes, and something along the lines of 1,500 images that everybody was posting to Instagram and Twitter. So, so we have that in addition to the app. As well, it's going to be more seamlessly integrated, I guess, as time goes on.
And Sarah, you said AppBuddy will make it possible for anyone to launch a native app for a BuddyPress social network at a fraction of the cost. And I know Brian was mentioning that during his presentation. But you being a fan of BuddyPress, how is that something that excites you? Would you like to see more BuddyPress powered sites with an app?
Yeah, definitely. People, you know, it's sometimes it's kind of hard for the social networking aspect of BuddyPress to take off because people like to have profiles and that kind of thing, but they don't realize that it's not terribly easy to get everyone to start using, you know, private messaging and activity streams and groups and that. But if you can do that from your phone easily, I think that's going to help BuddyPress communities take off more as a popular, you know, software to use to provide social interaction for people. So, you know, whereas previously it would cost like $100,000 or, you know, to put a price on it, whatever, for building a native app for, you know, for both platforms, it's very expensive. So, you know, a lot of people couldn't take advantage of that, even if they wanted to. But with AppPressor getting in the game, making it easy for BuddyPress sites to have their own native app, then, you know, it's going to make this possible for a lot more people to take advantage of that.
Yeah, what I like is the idea of push notifications via the activity streams. I think that would be neat.
Yeah.
So you could take, if you're interested in that, you can visit wparmchair.com. There are links to the app stores for both Android and iOS. It'll be in beta. It'll be out of beta within a week or two, so we'll see what happens, and pretty cool, neat little app, another example of what AppPressor can do. So with that said, we have David on the show, and I thought it would be cool to have David on. He is the primary organizer of WordCamp Miami, and just sort of, you know, get his take, you know, as an organizer as to everything that went down last weekend. And David, thank you very much for being on the show, and, you know, we talk about WordCamp Miami, but it was so much more. It's, you know, the event started on Thursday, lasted all the way to Sunday, and between all that, there was 2 days of sessions for WordCamp Miami. But on Friday, there is a WordPress 101 workshop that was all day, and a buddy camp. So there were all these events mixed in. And first off, have you recovered yet from from the event?
Yes, and I'm pulling an IV out of my arm right now so I can get closer to the closer to the monitor. Yes, I have. Our organizers, they sent flyers up yesterday letting us know they were still alive and where to find them. So it looks like everybody's survived.
So overall, as the, you know, one of the people who organized the event, what do you think? What's your overall take on this year's event?
I'm looking at it through rose-colored glasses, maybe, or maybe I'm biased, but I think it went up very well. I think a lot of things considered, that we had a new venue, that we had like 50% more ticket sales than last year, that we, you know, I don't know where the final numbers would lie, but I would imagine having more than 750 people at a WordCamp probably can make us one of the larger ones of the year. If you take all that into account and considering there, you know, the cops weren't called, there was no medical emergencies, and things went rather smoothly. People have said they had a good time, so then I guess it must be a win. But we are seriously, we're sending out the feedback forms right now, and so far I like what I see, and I agree with a lot of what I see. So I think overall, I think it was a big win, and actually maybe even went smoother than last year, which was technically a smaller attendee event.
Sarah, our own Sarah Gooding actually participated in the Buddy Camp. She had the first presentation of the day. And what are your thoughts on an entire day, entire event dedicated to the BBs?
So Buddy Camp, it was awesome. It was a great experience. I was really, really happy to see, you know, almost most of the people from the, I think 150 people were there. Almost all of them were new to BuddyPress, except maybe, you know, a dozen or so. But most of the people were just trying BuddyPress for the very first time, checking out the features and asking a lot of great questions. So that's very encouraging to see, you know, the love of BuddyPress expanding and people discovering it for the first time.
Yeah, for someone like me, this is the first time I really had a chance to see what BuddyPress is capable of, and I had a chance to look at all the different things on the back end of BuddyPress, and I thought it was a great idea of you having the BuddyPress demo site. But what did we learn from this event regarding the demo site?
Well,
breakfast first.
Since it was a demo site, I had a different password set up on there than, you know, like what I would use on another site that I'm logging into all the time. And I was hosted on WP Engine, so they have a lot of extra security stuff going on there. And I put the wrong password in 2 or 3 times, and then it locked me out. But it wasn't just me. It locked out, like, the entire IP address for the whole location.
Yeah.
So that was really embarrassing. And we were all locked out together, though. So.
Yeah, we had to actually go in the database and, I think, clear out the IP addresses just manually, just to get everybody. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, but it's, if you think about the way it works, that's really the way it's supposed to work. It's normally it's evil people doing these things and not us.
So in a weird sort of way, we sort of get an introduction to security as well, as part of your presentation.
Yeah, I guess so. It all worked out in the end. Some people were able to resolve the issue within a decent amount of time. And so we just talked about BuddyPress in the meantime, what it can do and how to use it.
Well, I just thought it was really cool because instead of having slides and saying this is what you could do, you had the demo site and you're saying, look, here's groups. Here's how you create a group. This is where you go. This is what you do. And it was just, for me, it was a lot easier for me to sort of understand, you know, what you're doing and what BuddyPress is capable of, watching you do it and seeing the results on the screen versus just, you know, a static slide. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if, David, if you've had early feedback yet, but have a lot of people commented on the fact that they enjoyed seeing the live BuddyPress demo site?
If the ratings for Sarah's presentation in our feedback forums are any indication, then they must have enjoyed it, because that's...
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
I know. First thing I've said that's been, like, you know, really clear and understandable and not with a joke. But yeah, but I'm serious. She's got very good marks so far with our feedback form. So I would think that would be a lot attributed to the fact that her presentation and the demo site worked hand in hand to get the message across.
So there's 770 attendees at the WordCamp event. Describe to us some of the logistics that went into putting on this event.
Logistics. Yeah. Well, there's a lot. I mean, obviously, we started months and months and months prior to this, and we have different people for different roles, and we take one section at a time, and we've kind of done this before. We've done a similar setup before, so we kind of been through. You know, we have a buddy camp on Friday and this sort of thing. And thanks to our amazing organizers and volunteers, we were able to break up the work and do it in such a way where it didn't kill any of us prior to the event. So we had somebody in charge of, you know, the volunteer coordination, you know, the after parties, the... Well, we had a couple people for the after party, so imagine. Yeah, we put a lot of emphasis on after parties, apparently. We also had people for the scheduling, for the speaker coordinator. I was acting as lead speaker coordinator this year, and so that allowed me to actually not just sit back and open up the the call for speakers, but we actively went out and asked specific people in specific groups if they would like to speak, and not just to get them in the pool of response, or the pool of the applications that we had to review. So it wasn't a sure thing for anything, but we wanted the pool of speaker applications to be more varied and more. What's the word I'm looking for here? I'm still tired, apparently. For variety, to have a little more variety in them, and we reached out to a lot of people, and I'm glad we did, because we got quite a number of first-time speakers. We also had one of our youngest speakers at WordCamp Miami speak, Anna Tuttle. She was 14.
Wow.
She spoke after lunch on Saturday. And I thought her presentation was pretty good, not just the presentation itself, but I personally think there should be more... there should be more of the younger, the next generation, speaking actively at WordCamps. And I'm glad we were able to include her in our session schedule on Saturday. So
Speaking of youth at WordCamps, WordCamp Miami had a WordCamp for Kids workshop that Sarah Gooding, Tammy Lister, the Catherine of Automatic and Noel Talk and some other people helped organize and volunteer. And Sarah, sort of give us your take on managing that workshop for kids. What were your impressions and what did you see?
Oh, it was a great experience. The kids were really excited to start publishing, and I was pretty surprised by their reactions. You know, I thought maybe they'd be bored with it or think it's difficult to use, but when they really got into it, they didn't seem to have any problems navigating around WordPress. And then one kid was so cute. After he published his first post, he would put his hands up in the air, and he was like, "Yes, I've just published my first post to the internet."
That's the kind of reaction we're looking for.
Yeah, quick, I love that.
Quick, get Chris Lehman in the room. Get this kid selling.
Yeah, it was awesome. So we had a great time.
Yeah, I was standing in the back of the room and I was noticing a lot of the children were almost ahead of the game. You know, you were doing things by steps and they were, you know, that's what kids do. They want to rush ahead and they were picking themes and doing this and doing that. And I'm like, you know, these kids don't need to be in a beginner's workshop. They need to be in the business of WordPress session, learning how to create and sell themes, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Some of them were pretty advanced, and they really, exploring the themes was probably one of the most exciting parts. I think everyone just tore off on their own, and trying on different themes was really fun for them.
So as I understand it, David, this was the first WordCamp for Kids workshop of its kind for Miami?
Yeah, I've seen it at other camps. Ever since I saw it at WordCamp Phoenix like 2 or 3 years ago, I've wanted to always have one in Miami, and it finally the stars aligned. And actually, it was like a random tweet. I think Sarah saw it or she participated, and I'm like, man, if I had a WordCamp Miami for kids, I would name it like this. And somebody said, well, why don't you have a WordCamp Miami for kids? And I go, yeah, sure, why not? In for a penny, in for a pound. If this doesn't kill me, it makes me stronger, you know, that type of philosophy. So started it. And I'm really glad we did because that especially, I think it was the most, you know, I'm running around everywhere, but I managed to stop and look in. And, again, just seeing what Sarah described is just really, really cool that you have these kids that will grow up to be the next bloggers, that will grow up to be the next potential WordPress users and developers and designers and all of that. To see them starting there at that point is really, really encouraging. And you saw the picture on Twitter, was probably the kids together is probably the proudest picture that's ever come out of WordCamp Miami.
That's awesome. I know one thing, when Tammy Lister was describing Minecraft, and she says, who here plays Minecraft? Almost every one of the kids' hands were raised. Minecraft is really big with the youth, I guess.
Oh, yeah, and they locked the two kids up in the closet that didn't raise their hands. So Minecraft is really, takes over the youth, and I'm glad she took that presentation because apparently everyone understood it and was really, kudos to Tammy for that idea.
So for WordCamps looking to grow, we've had a lot of questions from folks on Twitter, other WordCamp organizers that have organized maybe 150 to 180 person WordCamp events.
I'm so jealous.
For those looking to grow, you know, in your opinion, what should they consider when making the decision, and what data would be helpful to make that decision?
Well, I think WordCamps, I don't think you should be in a rush to grow. I think you should grow organically. So that means is what the community dictates or what your local area dictates. So if you get a lot of people in a meetup group, then obviously that kind of lends itself to think that you could probably have a WordCamp. You already have a WordCamp and you're looking to increase it. Just see if your community can support that. And a lot of communities currently do because there is growth in almost every sector or every area or every geological region for something like this right now. I think it really does start though at the meetup level, at the local level, and getting a response from that. So some of the suggestions that I gave out, the ways WordCamp Miami just basically took its time. We just upped it by 50 or 100 people every year, or more or less, until this past year where we said, okay, let's just let's just blow this taco stand and just see how, see if we can sell out it. And we did, amazingly enough. So I think the WordCamps, if the venues, you know, there's a lot of factors involved. There's venues, there's volunteer support and all of that. But assuming you have all of that ready to go, my advice is just, you know, continue to grow slowly and organically to at a nice, good pace that you're comfortable with it. And, you know, create the WordCamp, create the surveys that go out way before WordCamps are organized. Send those out to your meetup groups and all that. And then you'll get a good idea not only from the kinds of responses, but how many responses you get back. And, you know, there could be other people in colleges and tech, what do you call these places? Tech workshops or tech schools or educational places, them in colleges. You know, form relationships with those people, and you can also see how much, you know, if there's people at these colleges that will end up going to your WordCamp, and you can kind of approximate it. So, I mean, if you're selling out every year, and you should also set up a waiting list. And that waiting list obviously is useful for people who don't have tickets, who can get tickets. But that waiting list also kind of allows you to see, wow, last year we had over 100 people on our waiting list. And I realize not everybody on the waiting list is, you know, a solid attendee, but that could give you a good idea of how popular your event was last year and allow you to see how much you can grow this year.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of size of the WordCamps, you know, with 770 attendees and you had all these, you know, over 30 speakers and sessions going on all weekend, I realized that I found it difficult to meet and talk with people just because there's sessions going on, people are in the sessions, people I wanted to talk to are speaking at the sessions, there was, you're just here and there and you're at lunch and everybody is just, it's crazy, and after your event you go to the networking party and then there's, I don't know, it's just, there's, it was just very crazy for me, and I found out that I like to be at some of the smaller type WordCamps because it seems to be a little more intimate and a little more being able to chat and meet with whoever. What advice do you have for larger camps to encourage, let's say, more networking time?
Yeah, that is always a challenge for larger WordCamps, and I sympathize with you because I'm pretty much the same way. It's like the less people that exist, the more people I can possibly talk to. I think dodged a little bit of the bullet this year because of the venue at WordCamp Miami. There was actually a social, like, couches in front of the doors that led to the ballrooms for the session. So you could have just hanged out there and you really wouldn't miss anybody too much. But having social, the bigger you are, the more important it is to provide networking for your attendees. Let's be honest, there are some people that already don't have a problem socializing no matter what size of the WordCamp.
Right.
You saw those people a lot at WordCamp Miami. There was people that were socializing no problem. So those people are pretty much take care of themselves. People, if you're a WordCamp organizer, especially for one of a larger group, you need to create opportunities for those that maybe this is their first WordCamp or they're a little more timid socially. So you try to create a relaxing environment. This year, that's why we had coffee and the ice cream on Sunday, because that kind of gave people the opportunity to socialize without having to worry about the sessions going on or starting and stuff like that. You know, it's always going to be up to a person's social ability to try to, you know, communicate with other people there, but your job is just to make sure that they have many opportunities. Like we had that meetup on Thursday evening. Some people find it uncomfortable sometimes not to do it at the WordCamp, so we had socials at the WordCamp. We have things in the morning. We had, of course, the networking party on Saturday, and I think we're branding it networking party versus after party to try to give more people, try to get that message across that, yes, there is a networking. This is primarily for networking and for meeting other people than, you know, having, you know, other, you know, dancing and drinking or whatever it is that people associate after parties with. Yeah, but it is a challenge. The larger the WordCamp you are, the more difficult it is. And we encourage, I think it's just a more of encouragement of creating these pockets of networking capabilities, like stopping the, you know, trying to stop the session on Sunday just to give us a half hour just to relax and have some ice cream and, you know, no pun intended, chill out. And then Saturday there was a lot of people, and giving enough time for lunch, giving enough time between sessions too is also a great way of making it a relaxed environment, so people are not having to rush or run, and they can slow down and they can have conversations with other people. And we've gotten a lot of blog posts already from people that says, oh, I met all these new people, blah, blah, blah. So it's possible. And again, it's kind of reliant a little bit on the environment, the venue, and the people themselves. But as WordCamp organizers, you need to make sure that you do create those pockets of those social availabilities, especially for those who aren't, like, you know, experienced in WordCampers, where they find those people and they cling to each other like grapes on a vine type of a deal. I think we probably got as good as we could get with that, with an event of that size, and the venue helped us tremendously with that. With being able to section off social and session, but still have them close enough that people could intermix. Mm-hmm.
So part of what kept the event really well organized and kept people on the same page were those text message updates that you sent out. How do you set those up as a WordCamp organizer? Did you use a special service?
MailChimp has a service called Gather. You'll have to Google it, because I'm not sure how well they expose it, but it's a really great service I recommend for all WordCamp organizers. Basically, what you do is you set up, you pick a phone number, and MailChimp uses that phone number to send out and receive text messages. And you can create a sign-up form so people on your conference can sign up for it, and then you can send out one text message to that group. And then you get to pick a date, let's say May 25th, that once that date passes, the service is disabled, and you don't have anyone else's phone numbers. MailChimp has them until it deletes them, and it's a really nice protective service. And we actually had three of them. We actually had one for the general attendees, messages to get to the general attendees, like if ice cream was late or something along those lines. We had one for our volunteer corps, so we could say, hey, listen, you know, there's some heavy boxes here. Who can help us pick them up? And we actually had, one channel just for the organizers. So we actually had three channels for that text messaging service. And
wow!
Really, it really came in handy. It helps you avoid having to run around and try to yell and scream and try to find people and that sort of thing.
That's awesome.
Could have saved my marriage. I don't know. Yeah, but I recommend it. Look it up, read about it. It's a pretty cool service, and it's very inexpensive. I think you buy a number of texts or something like that. Whatever it is, I was still using the text from last year's WordCamp, I mean, so it's pretty inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So that's the magic of text messaging.
Great.
Yeah.
Jeff, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I thought you had a couple more questions for David.
Oh, okay, well, I'll continue on my run.
No, it's like I'm married. I'm used to not getting enough detention. It's fine.
So do you plan on organizing WordCamp Miami next year for its sixth run?
I don't know. let's see. My wife put you up to this, didn't she? She wants to know.
Everyone wants to know.
I honestly was 50-50 on retiring after this, because I didn't think it was going to run this smoothly, and everybody says, oh, you're automatically going to have another one, aren't you? And I'm like, okay, just keep moving. I would probably guess yes in some way, shape, or form, but I'm not sure if it's going to be the same event. We're obviously not going to get any bigger. I don't want to get any bigger. The sad part is we could get bigger if we wanted to. The waiting list this year is just as populous as the one as last year. But I'm kind of feeling that I want to try something new. I want to try something different, and I don't really know what that is yet. And eventually, I will come up with some sort of idea, and who knows? Maybe it will be the same event, but it definitely we want to try some different things. And there is that nice aspect of having smaller work camps. Now that we've proven that we can have a large event and have the largest of events, that maybe there is a way to change things up a little bit. And I'm not really sure yet what that is, but I'm open to something different. So I would imagine next year there would be a WordCamp Miami in some form. And it's just a question of whether it's going to be a big, large event or smaller events or along those lines. We've actually had talk about like a developer's like spa retreat type of camp. Type
Ooh. That sounds fun.
Yeah, see, I knew you wouldn't raise your eyebrows. Then. I don't know. Probably you're on some ideas, and who's, I don't know, at the end of the day, maybe we'll all have the same large word camp, but, you know, change some of the social aspects of it. But if for now, I think it's a pretty good chance that we'll have, you know, if all the other pieces, if we can get the same venue and all that, then we'll have a pretty good chance of doing it next year, too. I think I have to at this point. I think people are starting to threaten me if there isn't another one.
Yeah, they might protest.
Yes, protest. That's a good word.
So are there any behind-the-scenes stories that you care to share about challenges that you guys had to overcome during the event that maybe nobody knew about because everything was running, it looked like it's running smoothly, but you had to this big hurdle in the background to overcome?
Why would I make that public? It's like, somebody almost died. Let's tell it on a radio show a week later, yeah.
I will say one thing. You're mentioning the Gen Milo that you guys, you know, for the event this year, that you did a lot more planning when it comes to backup speakers. So you guys didn't have to do things at the last minute. Everything was sort of planned in case you had to, initiate the plan. I think that worked out well for you guys.
Yeah, we even had a cheat sheet. All the organizers had a cheat sheet of all the phone numbers of all the other organizers, of all the volunteers, of all the speakers. So if a speaker was late or we couldn't find someone, we could reach out to them, at least call them or text them. That was something that we found immensely helpful. I realize it's not drama, but it actually saved our butts a few times, having those phone numbers there, reaching out to the WordPress Foundation for, you know, there's last-minute credit card issues or something that got resolved, but we had that cheat sheet, so it wasn't a problem. We also had a dedicated line of registration for speakers and VIPs, which it's a great perk, but it's also a great way for your speaker coordinator to be able to tell when the AM speakers do check in and they're physically there. So by the time the opening remarks start, you know that you're ready to go for the next, at least for the next couple of hours, you've got your speakers there ready to go. So little things like that some of the stuff, you know, we've come up with before, and some of the stuff I was trying new this year, and, you know, other things were come up with other volunteers and organizers. These ideas really kind of just made things a lot smoother. And our volunteer force, again, was amazing this year. I think it took me 4 days on Twitter to thank the majority of the people, and I would still probably have to spend 4 more days thanking more people. It was that really made the camp right there. If we didn't have the volunteer stuff, it would have been hell. Or volunteer support, it would have been hell.
One thing about Miami is you guys had so much swag to give away between the buddy camp glasses and the podcasting panel microphones and the stickers, the buttons, the tokens. I mean, there is the headphones, the Beats, and some of those items were, of course, in the speakers bags, but there was just so much swag to give away. How did you manage to get all that swag to give away to people?
We had a 14-foot U-Haul truck.
Oh.
It was, yeah, it seemed a good idea at the time until I was swearing driving that truck in my own traffic on Thursday night, swearing to myself. And you forgot the speaker bags. The speaker bags, too. We actually, I don't know, maybe it speaks out to the materialism of Miami. I don't know. But we had a lot of good support this year. We had a lot of new sponsors. We had a lot of good sponsorships. And, some of that swag wasn't ours, by the way. That is other people's swag. So we don't go, we don't tell WireTree not to bring down shirts because, you know, I think we have so many WordPress t-shirts. We're making drapes out of them down here. But everybody gets to collect what they get to collect. I noticed you said on Twitter, like, you've had enough of swag, apparently.
Well, I mean, I've attended some of these work camps, and I come away with a bag filled with buttons and pens and this and bags, and just I'm accumulating so much stuff that it's like, wow, you know, I just want to sign up and say, yes, I want the t-shirt or the hoodie, but that's it. I don't want anything else.
I want all the swag. You can just give it to me, Jeff.
Yes, here's my address.
Mail it to me after you're done.
Did you see Michelle's picture? Did you see Michelle's picture?
Yeah. She just, it was all laid out, and it was like just this big spread.
Like she robbed a Walmart.
So, one of our last questions here before we wrap up the show. Some people want to know, what marketing strategy did you use to hype up the event, if you used a marketing strategy at all?
Well, I like to think, for the most part, there is no real marketing strategy, because I suck at marketing. I really do. I mean, you should see my freelance business. It's really nice. But there are some things that I do that seem to work out fairly well. And one of those is keeping an independent mailing list. So you have people, you encourage people to join this mailing list, you know, before the event, give out perks and special information during the event. You encourage the people that who missed the event or want to go to the next one to make sure that they're on this mailing list. So you keep pushing this mailing list. And right now, we've had the mailing list, I think, since before 2013 where Camp Miami, so it's like been 2 years. We have over 800 people on it. So as much as, you know, we cringe when we hear email lists and, you know, the room goes stale when you talk about it, but it does work. And the next time that we want to release initial information, like a date or something, we use that mailing list as a big tool. In fact, we broke records this year, I think, primarily based on that we had that mailing list. I think we sold 100 tickets the first day, and then we broke that record, and we broke the week record. So, you know, WordCamp Miami is one of those, you know, those WordCamps go where they sell out in 48 hours?
Right.
That's not us. That's not Miami. Miami's attitude is, we'll jump on it right now, and then we'll just kind of let it ride for a while. But we always sell out every year, and even with 750 attendees, more than we've ever had before, we still sold out a month prior to the event. But it's still that initial mailing list that we kept in, you know, pumping and using. And also meetup.com is also a good, excellent resource. If you have a strong local-based community, which you should if you're having a WordCamp at all, that's a good you'll find a lot of your volunteers. You'll find a lot of your most vocal and most energetic attendees that way as well. So I think between meetup.com and, like, having this established mailing list, really, I guess that's what you can call the marketing core of WordCamp Miami. And we've kind of grown to a critical mass where if we did this thing next year, it wouldn't be a lot of effort to sell out or at least get a majority of tickets sold within a certain parameter. But for newer WordCamps who don't have that privilege yet, my advice is just start that mailing list now and, you know, keep it independent. Make sure it's yours so that you can use it the way you want to, and you don't have to rely on any third parties to maintain it or change the rules on it. And that's the way I would do it. And I'm sure other people that would have better ideas. If you haven't already, it's what we did. What we found really awesome was that we reached out to. We actually didn't sit back and try to wait for the tickets to sell themselves or people to sell themselves. We actually go out physically to local colleges, tech groups, minority groups, and that sort of thing, and encouraging them, especially if we can give them a discount on the tickets, which we can usually do if they're a student or a teacher, and say, listen, this is going to benefit your school. This is going to benefit them students individually. And so that is also a great pool as well, depending upon how many colleges and similar facilities you have in your area. You know, reach out to them. Don't just wait for them to stumble on your website, or your marketing.
Go
ahead.
I'm just curious, what's your volunteer retention like? So how do you keep all these volunteers coming year after year to help with the event?
The thing about Miami is that we get a lot of Miami is a very transient area, so a lot of people leave, a lot of people come in to fill their place. We do have a lot of recurring volunteer work. We also have a lot of new ones as well, so that could be part of our advantage, is that we always get new, fresh blood, you know, for our meetups, and we always for our volunteers. And the meetups is actually a pretty important step in establishing that volunteer base. Because, you know, that's the first thing you can tell from your meetups who is really interested and wants to improve in the WordPress community, and you really focus on those people, and you do that months and months in advance, and you just to get the word out there, and then, and eventually you do have all right when you are starting to organize, you know, creating your organizers, creating your, you know, subcommanders and all of that, and you do have a good idea already of who's expressed interest in the past couple of months. It's really just your meetup. Again, the meetups are just like the focal point of all of that. And yeah, you can turn to people that were volunteers the year before and all of that. And you also should need to treat your volunteers pretty well. And sometimes it's a lesson I've learned, or I've tried to improve upon, because you're so used to the fact that all of this is a volunteer effort. So you're not making money. If you're an organizer, you're not making money off of this. Neither is anybody else, and you kind of just take it for granted that other people understand this completely. But if you do have the opportunity to, in some form, thanking your volunteers after the event, I think it's kind of like making them happy, or making them even happier that they've given back. You know, treat them well, because, you know, not everybody is a, you know, everybody works very hard, and it's just nice to show some appreciation, even though it's supposed to be a volunteer, open source community, you know, everybody's pitching in type of a thing. So this year we actually got some of the volunteers, you know, like a little gift when they left, and I think that's a good way of saying thank you. So don't take your volunteers for granted. If you're able to show them appreciation in some form too. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
Yeah, I think in summary, just try and get your organizers to feel like they were part of something special here with this event.
Oh yeah, it was something special, right?
So, David, first of all, awesome event. You guys did a great job. I remember seeing a quote by Mark Jakewood. He says, this is one of the largest work camps with so many people, yet it's so chill. You know,
he said that?
Yeah, he said that on Twitter.
I got to go back now through his Twitter feed, because usually I like to say morsels like that. And I think also a special shout-out goes out to Saeed and Batah and Michael and all those guys, that all the other organizers as well. I really don't like being the focal point or the public focal point of WordCamp, because it gives you the impression this is, like somebody said, oh, how's your event going? I'd be like, if this was my event, I'd be dead. Like, what vacation, you know, the only vacation I would be taking after WordCamp would be 8 feet underneath the earth in a box. But there's so many people that don't get the thanks, and I just want to just make sure that we're aware of those people, especially Saeed. He does a great job with sponsorships and behind-the-scenes planning and all of that. And we had so many volunteers this year. So it really is a very good group event, and everybody should feel great that we have this great amount of people. And we'll hopefully have that same thing happening next year too.
Awesome. David, I want to thank you very much for you and all your organizers and volunteers of WordCamp Miami for putting the event together.
I have to thank my wife. There we go.
Okay, thank your wife. And your kids? Thank your kids?
The wife's enough. Let's not get too crazy. Let's not get too crazy here.
Yeah, that's not. And hopefully we'll see what happens for the sixth year anniversary, the six-year edition of WordCamp Miami. We'll see what you have up your sleeve for next year. Thank you very much for being on the show today, and best of luck to you, and recover soon, 100%.
Thank you. We'll see you guys at future WordCamps that are not run by me.
Yes. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for the show on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at JEFFR0. And you can follow Sarah on Twitter at
Polly Plummer, PollyPlummer.
And we don't have a guest lined up for next week, but you never know. I'm working on someone special, and if that falls through, I will let you know on the WP Tavern website. But until next weekend, have a safe weekend, everybody.